The thing that is striking is that you're supposed to, a scientist should follow the truth wherever it leads, and if it leads to the rejection of something you've held for 20 years,
so be it.
So be it. That's the way. That's
pride. I mean, it's unfortunate, but pride too often gets in the way, and that's why paradigm shifts happen.
So welcome to Darwin Denied. We're working our way through the essential bookshelf of books that you really ought to read if you want to be current on the creation evolution debate, or the evolution intelligent design debate, or the creation intelligent design evolution debate, however you want to configure it. We've been reviewing books you could put them in three general categories: the intelligent design critics of evolution, and then the creationist critics of evolution. And then there would be people who are neither intelligent design people or creationists, but they just see the problems in Darwinism. Mm-hmm. We haven't gotten to Mind and Cosmos yet, but books like that. This book is in a fourth category, sort of all by itself. It's The Structure of Scientific Revolutions by Thomas Kuhn. And I include this in this list of books that you need to read if you want to be up on the state of evolutionary theory. Not because this book is about evolution. He may mention it in passing here, but it's about scientific paradigms and how they come and they go. Mm-hmm. And so even though he's not addressing evolution directly at all, what he's describing fits what's happening to the theory of evolution currently, mm-hmm. Exquisitely. It fits it in a remarkable way. So here's the takeaway point. I would like to explain the takeaway point of the book, and then maybe a quote, a citation from the book, and then we can make our applications to the theory of evolution. In scientific endeavors, you have what Kuhn calls normal science. So when there's a reigning paradigm and everybody's sharing the background assumptions, the same background assumptions, scientists go into their labs and they do their work and they register their results and they publish in journals and stuff. They're just doing normal science. Now, in the background of that normal science is a reigning paradigm. Mm-hmm. A paradigm would be something like the heliocentric view of the solar system in astronomy. Right. So that's the paradigm. You assume that the planets revolve around the sun, in contradistinction from the earlier geocentric view of the solar system. So that's a geocentricity, heliocentricity would be the paradigm level issue. The theory of evolution is very much a paradigm, mm-hmm. right? It's the case in which all the normal science is done. So people will make reference to evolution. Someone doing normal science will make reference to evolution even when there's no pressing need to do so.
Right.
You pay
lip service to the theory.
You honor the gods of your city, basically. Right. You're walking around in your city. You honor the gods of your city, even if the particular thing you were pursuing didn't require that at all.
Exactly.
So that's the role that evolution has. It is a paradigm, particularly for the biological sciences, but it's also in the background for physics and astronomy and so on.
Yeah.
So what Kuhn...
It's a different kind of evolution because cosmological, it's not biological, but if you're wanting a naturalistic explanation for everything, you have to think of evolution...
Of
everything, just different mechanisms.
Now, what Kuhn says is that when you, in the pursuit of normal science, you've got this paradigm, and compare the paradigm to a wagon. All right, you've got this wagon that's you're pulling down the road, and that's the paradigm that holds all the data that you're generating within the confines of that paradigm. Now, in every scientific paradigm, there are anomalies. there are things that don't fit. So it could be a brand spanking new paradigm, right? A brand spanking new paradigm, and everything seems to fit, and then you get to Uranus, which is a planet that's not spinning the right way. Right. It's sort of on its side, and it's not doing. That's an anomaly, but anomalies like that don't slow anybody down.
Right. So they just try to think of.
They just go
other explanations for
so
it.
So if you think of the paradigm as a wagon, every wagon can carry a certain number of cinder block
anomalies.
So the paradigm. Everybody's excited about it. It's fresh. It's new. It's exciting, but there are three or four cinder blocks in the bottom of the thing, which nobody sweats. Nobody cares about. But as time goes by, and normal science does its thing, people periodically pitch in a new cinder block. Here's another one, and here's another one, and then another one. And
wheels start to creak.
Pretty soon the wagon starts to creak, the wheels start to creak, and you've got this theory that has, you've got all these anomalies, right? And then one day something happens, and there is, Kuhn is the one to whom we are indebted for the term paradigm shift.
Right.
Okay. What happens is someone says, hey, wouldn't it be simpler if the sun were at the solar, if we put the sun at the center of the solar system, then we don't have all these planets doing their epicycle black backflips. All of a sudden, this is cleaner, simpler, Occam's razor.
Right.
Right. We can remove about 100 cinder blocks and get back down to 3 or 4 or 5 cinder blocks if we get a new wagon. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what happens is the old wagon collapses, and the new wagon is fitted out, and it goes down the road. There's a paradigm shift. Now, what Kuhn does is there's a one quote here. Max Planck, a famous scientist, one time said that science advances funeral by funeral. Mm-hmm. And what basically he's saying that the old wagon has its diehard advocates.
Yes, the wagon will never break down.
The wagon will never break down. And even though it's not moved a foot farther, we insist that it will.
And even though the axles are splintering.
Right. If I could just insert, using the example of a wagon, there's a delightful poem by Oliver Wendell Holmes talking about I think it's an analogy of a theological paradigm, New England Calvinism. Oliver Wendell Holmes wrote a poem called "The Deacon's Masterpiece," or the wonderful one hoss shay. So a deacon built this shay, this carriage that would last. He only the best materials. It had no weak point. Everything about it was, and so the carriage ran for 100 years and then collapsed all at once. Everything collapsed. Everything collapsed at the same time. That was a paradigm shift. The wagon collapses. So Max Planck says this. Kuhn says, quoting him, and Max Planck, surveying his own career in his scientific autobiography, sadly remarked that, quote, a new scientific truth does not triumph by convincing its opponents and making them see the light, but rather because its opponents eventually die and a new generation grows up that is familiar with it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's so true.
This is the situation, and this is why. Although Kuhn is not talking about the hegemony of the theory of evolution in the sciences,
right?
What he's describing here is not only descriptive of the situation we have with evolution, Darwinism, but there are even some additional factors, and that is, we have a major industry of creationists on the one side of the wagon, walking down the road along one side of the wagon.
They've got their own wagon.
They've got their own wagon, but they're throwing cinder blocks into the Darwinian wagon. And intelligent design guys are walking down to the other side of the wagon, throwing their cinder blocks in. And 5 years later, nobody quite remembers.
Often they heave the cinder blocks together, creationists and ID people. There's, hey, I need help with this.
Yeah, lend a hand over here. But 5 years down the road, the Darwinians don't know who threw that cinder block in there, but it's an anomaly. You have to you have to deal with it. You have to account for it. And at some point, you know, the older scientists start dying off, and younger scientists don't have the same set of allegiances.
No, they don't.
To it.
They're open. Some of them are very, very committed because they really want to impress their major professors.
Right.
But others are a little more open-minded.
Yeah, and you can see the I forget which book it was. It may have been Doug Axe's book, Undeniable, which was published by HarperCollins. And you look at who's willing to publish this sort of criticism, and all I can see are cracks in the dam.
Right.
This is not. Published by Buffalo Breath Bible College.
Right. Or Biloxi Bible. Shouldn't say towns.
unless they're made up ones like Buffalo Breath.
Yeah.
So what happens is you've got a younger generation that, although they are committed to Darwin, they're not committed to Darwin in the same way or with the same intensity.
They haven't put 40, 50 years of their career
into it.
Right. And it takes a lot of humility for, you know, what's interesting is it's easy for me to say it's an outsider saying, well, if I added a lot of those by doing good science, let's say I was an evolutionist, and by doing good science, I was responsible for putting a lot of cinder blocks in my own wagon, and it started to crack, I would not look at my career as one big failure.
Yeah, that's how it's supposed to work. That's how it's
I would say,
supposed to work.
Okay, this my science has shown that genetic change doesn't produce novelty, does not write up new genetic software that is responsible for entirely new body plans. So a lot of evolutionists are so diehard just in terms of the anomalies that they will almost posture themselves as if the new anomaly is exactly what they were expecting.
Right.
And saying, because this wagon is an infinitely, ideas aren't as clear cut as wagons. Mm-hmm. I mean, a certain weight, things break down. Ideas are a little less, like we were talking about the chessboard yesterday, is in a boxing match, you kind of know, occasionally it's hard to tell, and you need a judge up there saying
who scored a point.
But a knockout is pretty clear to all concerned, even if you don't know the first thing about boxing. I think that guy on the floor is down, and I think the other guy won. Mm-hmm. But in ideas, it's a lot easier for the scientific community to say that nothing could be better right now. We're at the golden age of evolution. Right now, there's so many anomalies that we're looking at. The dam is cracking, everything's falling apart, and their biggest spokespeople, I think of Jerry Coyne. He's not only a professor of evolutionary biology at a top-notch school, University of Chicago, but he's very outspoken and saying that evolution couldn't be healthier, stronger, and making all sorts of ad hominem attacks on anybody that's an I. This is one of the ad hominems. They'll take this is supposed to be an insult.
Right.
That any ID person that criticizes evolution, they call an intelligent design creationist. Hmm. The creationist is tacked on as a sort of a
jab.
A jab, an insult, because the Some ID people are, they are ID and they're creationists and they're fine with that. You know, yeah. But some ID people are not fine with that. And right. They just, it gets at them. And Coyne knows, particularly Coyne, but there are others that will resort to that kind of insult. Mm-hmm. Because it's easy to.
And he's actually being the Baghdad Bob of Darwinism, right?
Explain.
Explain. So back in the first Gulf War, when we attacked Iraq over Kuwait, there was a spokesman for Saddam Hussein, who the press agent or whoever it was, and as the American troops were approaching Baghdad, Baghdad Bob would come out and say, "We have them on the run," and he would just they were totally being the floor was being wiped with them, and mm-hmm. he would be announcing all victory after victory. Victory. Yeah. You know, we've got them now, and it was just a ludicrous display. The thing that is striking is you're supposed to, a scientist should follow the truth wherever it leads, and if it leads to the rejection of something you've held for 20 years,
so be it.
That's the way. That's
pride. I mean, it's unfortunate, but pride too often gets in the way, and that's why paradigm shifts happen.
And that's why
because
they happen.
Pride is standing in the way of progress, and so you get to this point where the old guard is just stubbornly adhering to the old paradigm. Never, don't bother me with the data.
Right, and that's why it advances funeral by funeral.
Funeral by funeral, because in order to kill pride, you have to kill the person, unless the gospel is involved.
Right. So if I could appeal to another book of the same nature, it's not a book that's not talking about evolution, but it applies to evolution mm-hmm. in spades, and that would be Taleb's book, The Black Swan. Mm-hmm. One time I wrote on my blog or something, something like any remarkable historical event, regardless of how remarkable it is, if this historical event happens, then in the aftermath of it, any number of competent historians will be able to show how that event was inevitable.
Right.
Right. Right.
They'll so pull after, together all of the pieces of
that's what historical. They can go back and view the game film and they can say, well, an example would be the collapse of the Soviet Union. When the Soviet Union went down, when I grew up in the Cold War, the Soviet Union was this monolithic thing that was just a fact of life. It was just the way it was. I remember reading an article or seeing an article predicting the crack-up of the Soviet Union, which was, at the time, just crazy talk. It was mm-hmm. just absolute crazy talk. But then when the Soviet Union collapsed, any number of historians can show that this was actually inevitable.
Right.
But it wasn't so inevitable that they were able to predict it beforehand. But after the fact, they were able to show how inevitable it was. Same thing with something like the earth-shaking epic of the Reformation. The Reformation appeared to the people at the time like a thunderbolt out of a clear blue sky. But any number of historians can show how the Reformation was necessary.
And it was,
so if we fast forward 50 years, mm-hmm. and Taleb calls this basically that kind of event is a black swan. Mm-hmm. If we fast forward 50 years and we are standing in the rubble
of Darwinism.
Of Darwinism.
Woo-hoo, I hope I'm, I don't, I would be 107.
Yeah. So let's.
Not likely.
But so let's say.
I would do a jig in my wheelchair. But
yeah, you bounce your wheels. looking back, when Darwinism collapses, any number of scientific historians will be able to predict over the course of the decades running up to that collapse.
Right.
How inevitable it was, because they will be able to see the anomalies where currently we throw another cinder block into the evolutionary paradigm, and Jerry Coyne can say, "Oh, say, can you see? I'm not listening. I'm not listening to you because you're a whack job creationist.
Right.
I'm not listening." But the cinder block is still in there.
Right.
You still have to carry the weight of that. You still have to answer how it's possible for the cell to organize itself the way it doesn't even have a self to organize itself with. It's just a mashup, right?
Yeah.
So
I'm hoping it won't be 50 years. I think it'll be sooner, because once some data can be pretty impactful, almost like a knockout punch. Mm-hmm. I think right now they can just dodge a lot of the blows and pretend that those blows didn't shake the theory up. But you know, I think that there's been a few torpedoes under the waterline that
and they
above the waterline, everything's good, the flags are flying, but down in the engine room
right.
There's a lot of sweating sailors, and you know.
So back in the 70s and 80s, Institute for Creation Research and people mm-hmm. like Dr. Gish and
right.
would travel around
early debate, pioneers.
The early pioneers, they could get people to debate them,
mm-hmm.
right? There would be right. debates, but over the last 20 years or so, the strategy has appeared to have been. I think I read in Dawkins' book that to appear with you in a debate like this would look great on your resume, not so great on mine.
Mine, right.
Right.
Yeah. So they don't want to give ID or creationism any kind of platform or credibility. Because if we even debate you, we are conceding too much. We are taking you seriously.
Right.
And right now, we just don't want to take you seriously.
And that strategy had some good short-term benefits for them, like they could look serene and above it all. But that just left us free to throw cinder blocks into their wagon.
Right, right.
Right? And book after book, and there doesn't appear to be any sign of a let-up. The more we discover about the world, the more we discover about what's going on at the cellular level, the more we discover.
Oh, yeah, it just keeps getting the complexity, as we've talked about this before, the complexity just keeps getting it's been, we've known it to be complex for many, many decades. But as we unveil more and more about the inner workings of the cell, and then at the macro level and all of the interactions going on within the body and all sorts of chemical signals and communications right. and feedback mechanisms, the complexity problem just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And the toolkit of evolution, and a lot of people say in the cutting edge, people will say, well, Darwinism's been dead. That's sort of an archaic form.
Yeah.
And that's why they'll poo-poo Michael Behe in his new book. I haven't read it yet, but I'll just say, oh, he's attacking this archaic version mm-hmm. of we know better. There's all these nuanced aspects to the theory of evolution in its modern form. But underneath all of it, whether it's the new facelift implant job of Darwinism, it is still operating on unguided mechanisms. And when you just keep finding more and more specified complexity, it boggles the mind. You really have to turn the other way. I'm beginning to wonder whether they're really, they have this amazing faith in such a little toolkit,
mm-hmm.
This toolkit of mutation, natural selection, a few other mechanisms thrown in there, all of it is unguided. And the faith that they have in this tiny, it's like a little kid's toolkit, saying, this toolkit
built the 747 and without anybody.
Lunar landing module.
Yeah, lunar landing module, or these satellites that land on Mars or go to the edges of our solar system. And we're looking at pretty much the same toolkit. They'll rename a few things, add a few nuanced ideas to the theory, but underneath the current theory, it's all unguided.
And this practice of while they've been trying to serenely ignore the ID guys and the creationists, that's bought them a little bit of time. But that means that the creationists and ID people have been refining their arguments, publishing new books, discovering new things. So the critics of Darwin are in fine fighting trim. They're in shape.
Right.
And when it finally gets to the point where the evolutionists realize we have to defend our citadel, we're going to have to fight, we're going to have to engage, they're not going to have anybody capable of doing that. They're going to try to debate, and they've been so used to misrepresenting what we're saying that they will, which you can get away with if you're a classroom lecturer at a state university, you can tell all your freshmen, creationists think this, right? But if you're in a debate, if you finally get to the point where you have to close and you have to debate with him,
right,
and he says, no, I don't think that. And
your little straw man, version of me isn't going to fly when I'm in the room.
Right. And so so what this boils down to is I think that we're observing, and again, Kuhn is not saying, look at evolution fall apart.
Right, because he would probably be an evolutionist.
He would be an evolutionist. But what he describes when he's a masterful scientific historian describing a number of the transitions, and he sees how these transitions happen, and he describes it in such a way that a creationist or an intelligent design reader reading this book would say, oh, he wasn't talking about, it's like an old age doctor describing how someone dies and have you say, oh, that's my Aunt Millie. Someone's going to say, oh, that's the theory of evolution.
That's where we are.
That's exactly where we are.
Yeah. When I was getting into my master's program, my major professor said, I just heard that you were Doug Wilson's little brother. And I said, I was just about to be accepted. And he said, just wanted to discuss that with you just in case there may be some irreconcilable differences come thesis time. And I allayed his concerns by just saying, well, it seems to me it was sort of an agriculture.
Doug was born first and I couldn't do anything about it.
And I basically said, well, it seems to me I could write a thesis. It was an agricultural entomology. And so I thought, well, couldn't I just, get my data, analyze my data, and not really pay lip service. He was just so used to having people incorporate it into the thesis. And I suggested that I just present the data, analyze the data properly, and not really weigh in one way or another. And that seemed to satisfy him. Now, it was a moot point because I did a non-thesis anyway, but that was just a concern. And it really is, I think we need to pray for a lot of the old guard to be humble enough to switch. But
and you reminded you reminded me of a point that we've not yet made in this as we're setting up for this paradigm shift. The new guard, the ID people and the creationists, are every bit as credentialed as the old guard.
So the mudslinging, they can't say you got your diploma
from a cereal box, right?
Yeah,
you say you guys trained us.
And we're just thinking outside the box outside the paradigm, and this explains a lot more.
Right.
So,
so if you want to, if you want a glimpse at tomorrow's newspaper, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions by Thomas Kuhn, who would no doubt be dismayed at my my applications of his insights, but that's, you know, we weren't put into this world for pleasure alone.